So, Jay, why don't you tell us how Johnny Wore Black got started?
Okay, Johnny Wore Black got started about 3 years ago. I mean, I've over the years, I've been in a lot of bands and, you know, written a lot of music. And there was certain songs that I felt I wanted to re-record and put them out fresh. So I decided to just start this new project, which became Johnny Wore Black, and it just went from there, you know.
Nice. Now, how did you find the members of your band, and who are the members of your band? I mean, how did everybody come together?
Well, that was kind of an organic thing, and you know, like a lot of bands, we still have a couple of different guest musicians. And, you know, like Johnny Wore Black is a little bit of an organic thing. Yeah. So there is a band that I work with to go out there and play. But as you know, there's also contributors who are very strongly influential, like David Ellefson, and, you know, other people that I've worked with that do contribute to the overall project. But we have at the moment, a lot of the core music is with a guy called Jez Walton, who's a guitarist from a band called Earth Tone 9. Simon Hutchby, drummer from Earth Tone 9. James Coppolaro is another guitarist who I do a lot of work with. So, you know, there's a few guys that kind of make the kind of the core of Johnny Wore Black. But other people that are involved, you know, I like to keep it fluid, you know.
Nice. Now, you mentioned Dave Ellefson, and we're obviously talking about Dave Ellefson from the bass player from Megadeth. How did you hook up with him, and what's his role? Because he's, like as we spoke before, you are so un-Megadeth in your music.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm smiling because maybe being un-Megadeth could be our catchphrase. I don't know. This is the un-Megadeth band.
I mean, both bands are awesome, but they're awesome for different reasons.
No, listen, it's a very different thing. You know, I think that although we may have some crossovers in the audience, you know, we're out there at a different kind of, you know, we're hitting a slightly different market. I mean, I see it that it's all rock, yeah. If I was to put like a very broad label on it, I feel like it's all rock. But you know, Megadeth obviously goes off very much with its own well-established genre, you know. And I think Johnny Wore Black is a little more maybe progressive, alternative rock, that kind of thing, you know.
Now you have a movie background, correct?
Yeah.
Why don't you explain that? And I'll, you know, and also I want to get into the fact that you were a stuntman for a while.
Yeah, I mean the movie background. Quite simply, my dad was a movie director. So when I was a kid, I spent more time on film sets than I did at home. You know, when other kids were getting picked up from school by their parents, I was picked up in a taxi or by a driver, who would then take me out either to location or to the film studios where my dad was working. So, you know, I was sort of familiar with that world from a really young age. I lost my dad when I was 17.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And yeah, it's just, you know, life always has something unexpected around the corner, right?
Oh yeah.
Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's a little more challenging, but you know, that's life. So, yeah, I guess from that point on, I tried doing different things. I was always sort of writing music, even through my teens, and that was my kind of outlet, if you like. You know, that was my way of expressing myself. And then I got a job with a buddy of my dad's, actually, who was also working in the movie business, and I did some acting work for a couple of years. And I think I had, you know, I had sort of, if I can put it this way, like quite a lot of inner aggression, you know, and it was pushed deep inside. And I think it's like I needed to sort of do something physical, you know. That to me was like doing something physical was like You know, I could channel that into something was positive, you know, not hurting people, not, you know, not like going off the rails, but I needed to push myself in a way that was going to kind of, keep me focused, if that makes sense.
Yeah? Oh, it totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. It's how you channel your energy, and do you use it for good, or do you use it for your bad?
Yeah, you know how it is. So I think, so to answer your question, I got into stunt work then. I was working at one of the movie studios, I met a stuntman, a legend in the United Kingdom called Rocky Taylor, who's still out there working. I was working with him last year. And Rocky just kind of introduced me to the stunt world, and I went from there, you know. And so I made a lot of contacts in the movie industry, and I still get called to work now, you know.
So you still do it?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Wow. Now I've always wanted to ask a stunt person this. What's
it like being in a band when you're a stunt person?
No, well, that too. Now actually, that's a second one. But
what kind of music does a stuntman make?
Well, no, I mean, what's the absolute craziest stunt you've ever done? And have you ever been asked to do something where you like, you guys are effing crazy?
You know, to be honest with you, like, I think a lot of the time the stuff that we do might look crazy, but being crazy gets you kind of broken up and a short career. So, like, I can only sort of associate it maybe a little bit like a soldier, you know? You do some pretty serious stuff sometimes, but you need to be professional, you need to have your head on straight, you know, and you need to make sensible choices. It's not about being like a crazy guy, being a daredevil, being a, you know?
Yeah.
Go for it no matter what. Because, you know, you got to think about it. These aren't kind of... Like, stunt people aren't trying to break records, right? They're not out there doing... I mean, yes, there are some great stunt shows, but it's a little different, you know, out there doing like a live stunt show from doing a stunt on a movie. And most of the work that I would do would be like stunts on movies, right? So, you know, in that situation, you need to be professional. You need to do a good job. Nobody wants to see a guy get injured. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And you know how the world is nowadays. Everything is paperwork. Everything is health and safety. Everything is lawsuits. So, you know, it's a job that obviously has elements of danger, but we do everything we can to make it as safe as possible.
Henceforth, they're insured, and by the time you do this stunt, everybody involved has done everything possible to make sure that you're safe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, hey, Dave Grohl just did a stunt, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go and see him at Wembley, actually, on Saturday.
Oh, nice, man, nice. Yeah, ask him how he's doing.
Trying to swing at the moment. Yeah, he's such a great guy, you know? He really is.
Exactly.
And what a hero for breaking his leg and being up there again, right?
Exactly, totally, man. Totally. So now, but the cool thing is, though, is, you know, with you having a cinematic background, I mean, you're like, I think I mentioned this to you earlier, that your music has a cinematic tone to it, or, you know, a bravado to it that you find in cinema.
Well, I hope so. I mean, look, I think, you know, to some extent, when I write songs, I very much, it's almost like when I write a song, I close my eyes and I'm seeing it in pictures. Yeah. Now, for practical purposes, I can't make a video for every single song that we do. I'd like to, right? Because, you know, I think the moving image and music just go, they're one and the same to me. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, you know, but I suppose the journey would be to, yeah, have more music in feature films and you know, I think that's one of the things I like about Tarantino, you know, his music, like, in a way, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, I mean, you know, what, like, people remember the soundtrack as much as the movie, and it's almost like one long music video. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and with
so cool. Yeah, yeah. and Django or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, well, and Tarantino, I mean, he has that ability to, like, when I hear the song months or years later on the radio, I think of his film.
You think of his film, I know. Exactly.
Even though it could be a David Bowie song, like the one in Inglourious Basterds, which was written 30 years before the film.
That's right. Yeah, I know. I mean, I think with Comfy Slippers, we tried something different because we had one line of dialogue in it, right? You know, when the character, our character in the hotel room picks up the phone, you know, and says warm water for the bride and groom, red wine on ice, and then puts the phone down. You know, again, we wanted to just introduce something different, and having the elevator music before the track starts at the beginning. I mean, the director, who's a buddy of mine, a guy called Mark Craig, is actually a documentary filmmaker, and he's just done a spectacular piece called Last Man on the Moon, which he shot out at NASA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's an English director, but he just shot a big budget documentary with an astronaut called Gene Cernan, who was the last man on the moon.
Yep, Apollo 17.
Yeah, exactly. I had the pleasure to meet, and I actually worked on Mark's movie.
Oh, wow.
As well. Yeah, that was a cool story because, like, I'll keep it really short, but Gene Cernan did this walk, you know, this kind of spacewalk that went wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And got tangled up in the umbilical that was attached to his suit and all this kind of stuff. And so they, in order to reproduce some of that work, that walk, they've got the original footage, but they also wanted to, like, reproduce it in a studio in England. So they flew over from NASA an original spacesuit.
Oh, wow.
With a handler. Yeah, this guy who travels with the suit because nobody else is going to know how to put the thing on. So we did, you know, we did a few days of actual shooting of me doing this spacewalk, you know, in an actual suit. So that was a hell of an experience. And then to meet Gene Cernan himself, and I think he said to me that I actually wore the suit longer than he ever did. Because obviously, you know, you're going to work in the morning, you're in the suit for 12 hours, and then you... day after day after day. But anyway, that was cool. Yeah,
did he tell you what it was like on the moon? I mean we all seen the film footage and everything, but did he ever say what it was like? I mean, because I mean, you know, I would be in awe,
honestly. The best thing, it's better coming from him than from me, so I would say just check out Last Man on the Moon. It's starting to get its I think it's just got its, like, cinema distribution. So it's going to be out there. It's going to be on TV. It's going to be on the internet. It's going to be everywhere. But, yeah, because, you know, he talks about that sort of thing, right? But it wouldn't be right me explaining that secondhand.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because
you have near the moon.
Yeah, you have. That's one of those things you have to be there to even know what it's like.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Let me ask you this. I've heard Firefly and Comfy Slippers, and the videos are brilliant. They're totally going the opposite directions from each other, but both songs have a consistency and quality to them. And so I'm wondering, with the two albums, Walking Underwater Part 1 and Part 2, how do you pick and choose? I mean, is it like, you know, what's going to be singles? I mean, is it like picking who your favorite child is, or?
That's a good question. The thing is, it's to answer that question, if I can look at it this way, the music industry is so confusing nowadays. And, you know, you talk about singles, and I've had sort of people within our management say, well, you know, nowadays a single doesn't really matter. You know, what's a single? I don't know. People just pick what tracks they want from the album. So to some extent, yes, it was a difficult decision, but I suppose really what one does is just choose what you like. Yeah, so in other words, I chose a couple of songs that kind of worked for me, and then I would go and meet with a couple of different directors, sit down with them and say, well, okay, usually like the idea for Firefly, I had this kind of Frankenstein story idea. Yeah. And for some reason, I felt that was a different take on the way to tell the Firefly story. Yeah, to do it in a kind of Frankenstein scenario, right? You know, a sort of Dr. Frankenstein, and giving life to these two creatures, and you know, the two creatures on the plinth end up, you know, are they lovers? Are they, you know? Yeah. All right. So, and I think so. To answer your question, I think Firefly was obviously already there as a song, and I think it was really just a question of thinking about a storyline that suited the song, and the two just seemed to marry up quite well. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, Comfy Slippers, again, we actually looked at, we were going to do the same style of video to Comfy Slippers or to a different track, which was, you know, that's a damn good question. There was another, it was between two songs, right, and cut a long story short, that it was a director's decision in the end that we went with Comfy Slippers, just because he felt it suited, you know, yeah, it just suited the vibe of the song, and the vibe of the imagery just worked well together.
Ah, okay. Well, if you could choose as a musician, you know, with between the two albums, part one and part two, one track off each, and the rest you had to throw into the fire, which would they be and why?
That's a good question. You've done this before, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, all the time, man. I'm always curious about, okay, what's the artist's favorite song?
All right. Okay. All right, Walking Underwater Part 1. I mean, the thing about Walking Underwater Part 1, it has these, like, sound bites between each track. Right, like, it's much more of an almost a concept album, a little bit more, dare I say, Pink Floyd, right? Because we have you'll hear between each track, we've got sounds of the River Thames, sounds of old machinery, we've got James Mason, the actor, talking between certain songs and things like that. Now, all that came from a documentary that my father made in 1967 called The London Nobody Knows, yeah? Right, so that was part one and part two feel like they have moved for me. Yeah, there is a journey there, and I think, you know. So I guess part one, I'm probably going to go for a track called So Dusted. Yeah, which I like, which I really wanted to shoot like a short movie stroke music video for, but just hasn't happened yet. But it still could. All the Rage and Up in Flames were the two big singles from Walking Underwater Part 1. And again, both of those had videos. So, yeah. And Part 2...
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah. Probably going to go for Noise. Yeah. The only other thing I was going to say about part two, I mean, Noise is the other one that has the video, which was animated by the same guy that did Firefly. Yeah. And Noise actually had another guitarist on it, a buddy of mine who also co-wrote it, called Pete Mathers. He's an awesome guitarist, and he contributed to Noise, and I think it just sounded slightly different because of his guitar playing as well. You know, sometimes you bring someone in and they just add a hint of something that just feels a little different.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's all mixed together. I mean, it's different when, I mean, you bring other people in. It's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, Winter in July was an interesting one on Walking Underwater Part 2. And I think we will shoot something for that, because Loretta Haywood, I don't know if you know this, but there's this lady called Loretta Haywood that sings backing vocals on Winter in July. Actually, it's her song. She wrote it, and I always liked it. And when I was a youngster, that song was like, that was in the charts. That was like a big pop record, yeah? And if you Google it, you can see her on all these like pop shows. It was like number... I think it got to like number two, like in something like nine countries in Europe. you know, or number one in some, number two in others. So Winter in July was like quite a cool song. And a buddy of mine who is a music producer called Tim Simenon, he had a lot of success with an outfit called Bomb the Bass, which isn't so much in our genre. But then Tim went on. Hey, it's kind of funny. Tim and I were in a cover band. How cool is this? Tim and I were in a cover band at school, right? Doing Depeche Mode covers. All right. Okay. Tim went on to produce Depeche Mode's album called Ultra, which bought him a house. Very nice. So the reason why I mention him is because he produced Winter in July, the original one, yeah? And I called him up and I said to him, listen, you know, I've always liked that track. Is there any chance you could hook me up with Loretta, who wrote it, so that I can ask her if she'll give me her permission to do a cover? Yeah? So she gave me permission to do the cover and even agreed to sing on it. So that was nice. Yeah. So that was interesting, though, because I've never done anything like that. That's a real pop song made kind of, you know, become into the world of Johnny War Black. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And that sounds brilliant. The way that was just pieced together.
It just, yeah, sometimes things just work, don't they? You know, and it's just, you know, you got to give it a try and it just works, you know. I like the song. Yeah. And I'm quite happy to say I like our version of it as well. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, let me ask you this. What is your live show like?
The live show is, what's it like? Well, big, getting bigger, loud, getting louder, good, getting better.
Nice.
Yeah, I've never said that before, so that wasn't rehearsed.
I was hoping you weren't going to say getting gooder.
No. No. You know how live shows are. I mean, it's my own vision of how I want the live show to be needs Metallica's budget. You know.
Well, how close do you think you are to that now?
I'm not sure what Metallica's budget is.
Probably more money than we'll ever see.
Well, I'm not going to agree with you there, because who knows, right? You know, who knows?
Exactly. That, I mean, actually, I think they kind of stripped it down the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think they have too. But you know what I mean? It's almost like if we limit ourselves by thinking, well, wow, could never be there, then that's kind of, you know, you may as well just give up, right?
You know what, though? I actually, with your music, from what I've heard, I mean, you could actually, I mean, I actually picture you doing something down the road with U2's budget.
Well, that would be nice.
You know, I mean, I could picture you having a visually stunning show like what U2 does every time they go out.
That's how it should be. And that's, you know how it is. Like, at the moment, it's been, funding has been a mixture of our own funding with bits of, you know, bits of contributors, and we've had a few like sponsors and things like that. But until we have the right label behind it, it's always tough. And I know people say nowadays, well, I'm going to start my own label and, you know, and hey, we've got the internet and everybody's going to know it. And, you know, it's, there's so much material out there, as you know, right? You know, so, you know, I think we're kind of getting to the stage that it's going to take some more serious involvement from, shall we say, the suits or the grown-ups. Yeah?
Yeah, the bean counters.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You know, in order to take this project to the next level. Mm.
Now, how close do you think you are to that? I mean, like, if you were, like, from point A to B, how close to B would you be right now?
What is B?
B is the end goal.
I think that the end goal... Okay, if A is at 1 and the end goal is 10, yeah? All right. I think we're about three.
Now, why do you think that is?
A lot of growth still to do. Because I think even though, you know, music's been going on like in my life, all my life, but to be honest, Johnny Will Black is still a baby. You know? It really is. And I think we need to be in front of the right decision makers who can step in and help to, you know, sort of take us from 3 to 4 to 5 to 6, you know?
Exactly. Now, Johnny Were Black, I mean, I know, a little bit ago you talked about, you know, started only a few years ago, but you've done a lot in a few years. I mean, I've seen bands that have been around for 5 to 10 years that can only tie what you've done.
Well, I suppose we're really just, you know, the people involved are working hard. It's kind of frustrating. It's a tough business, you know, and sometimes you feel like you go 3 steps forwards and 2.5 back, you know, sometimes you feel like you go 3 steps forwards and 4 back.
Now, are you putting 100% of your energy into this?
No, not 100%. I mean, the reason why I say that is because I still, you know, as you know, I still work. Yeah. I like when film gigs come in, you know, I take them unless I have a commitment with my music going on. So I suppose, you know, 100% of my commitment, it's probably the majority of my commitment. But obviously there's other things in life need attention, right?
Oh yeah. But it's safe to say that this is your main project.
Yeah, when this happens, I'm running all the way with it. Yeah.
Nice. Now have you guys toured like extensively yet, or have you done that?
Not yet. No, the majority of the project so far has been recording, producing music videos, writing. That's been the majority of the project.
Do you have a tour like in mind, like in your head, how you'd like to plan it out?
Well, I mean, the one that I was over in Nashville earlier in the year. And I was meeting with some touring people over there, and you know, I met with the tour manager and a couple of other people, and you know, doing a US tour would be my kind of, you know, that's the one I want to do.
Okay, I mean, I can picture you guys going over really good here, especially during the summer season.
I think so. I think, you know, even I suppose it's finding the right level of tour, isn't it? Because you know, we're not going to pull in big crowds yet in the States. So, but on the other hand, we don't want to play to, you know, to empty buildings where people don't come and see us because they don't know who we are. So the ideal would be to piggyback with some other bands, you know, and if we were on the same roster as some, you know, some bands that have been around longer, that would be the perfect way.
I could picture it at where you're at now. Mm. What would really go over good would be if you were to attach to a double headliner as the opening act.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
You know, yeah, where you've got two well-established major label acts, and then you attach yourselves to that, and then you take their fans.
Yeah, or even share their fans.
Well, yeah, share them, because they're not, you know, they're not monogamous.
So. No.
You know, so it's not going to be like, well, screw Megadeth, we're going with Johnny Were Black.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think, from what the press tends to say, they seem to put us in a similar place to the likes of Ashes Divide, Carnival, A Perfect Circle.
Yeah, I could see A Perfect Circle.
Yeah, Tool. You know, I mean, you know, to me, any of those guys are awesome. So
also, I could see you guys play with the Smashing Pumpkins too.
Yeah, actually, that's come up. You're not the first one to say that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it's interesting, actually, isn't it, that our producer has produced both the Smashing Pumpkins and Tool.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know if you're familiar with David Bottrell.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, he has, I think he's got 1, 2, 3 Grammy Awards for producing Tool.
Wow.
And, he's out of Toronto, and I'm actually flying over to see him the week after next to record vocals on our new album.
Oh, wow. So you guys are already back in the studio for a third one.
Yeah. Now. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. What's this one going to be called? I mean, have you got it all conceived yet? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. The next one is Ultraviolet Light.
Oh, I like that title.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what the next album is. In fact, you know, you've just had an exclusive. I don't think I've told anybody that. Maybe I haven't been supposed to say that yet.
Oh, wow. Well, too late now, man.